We never get around to talking about Dalam Minim, because we always start to shoot about Yom Kippur, and then we start the kosher, we get in one shape about Sukkot, and then Dalam Minim always gets lost. So I think we'll start backwards. We'll talk a little bit about Dalam Minim. Just some of the ABCs, some of the things that people should be aware of when they are looking around for Dalam Minim, both in terms of a little bit of Lamdus, a little bit of Lamaisa, just some little guidelines. So of course, the Torah tells us that there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah, l'kachta mochem b'yom. It's a mitzvah in the Torah on the first day, at least throughout the world, and this mikdash is the whole week. And on the first day in the Medina, throughout the world, we're taking the Dalam Minim. The Torah describes the first Medina as a pre-Eitz Hadot. The Torah Shema Peh tells us we have a halacha mashem Sinai, but the Ram calls the parish of the Kubim Sinai, actually, that it's the official Torah translation of the phrase pre-Eitz Hadot, according to an Esrei. What are some of the dinim that govern an Esrei being kosher or not? So the first thing is that it has to be an effort. It can't be something else. It can't be another min. So why do I say that? That sounds obvious. This is what some person said, that that's the reason why an effort hamorkov is not acceptable. It's interesting. There's a lot of tumult in the last couple hundred years about grafts in Esrei. If you graft a lemon tree with an Esrei tree, what's the status of that? Is that fruit? Is that kosher for a dalam minim or not? So the Achronim had 15 different reasons why it's so good. Some Achronim write, it's because mitzvah babi avera. Since you're not allowed to graft in the first place, and even goyim perhaps are not allowed to graft the trees, so therefore it's possible it's a mitzvah babi avera. And another Achronim says it's possible because it's like an esrog hachoser, because the Gemara says, Mishnah says that if part of the esrog is missing, it's not kosher. So when you graft an esrog with a lemon, so you only have half an esrog and then half a lemon, so that's like an esrog hachoser. So if I'm not mistaken, they say for Reb Chaim that the reason why an esrog hamurkav is possible is that it's not an esser, that's what it's called. I mean, it's obvious, it's like taking an orange, it's like taking a banana. It's a new min, called an esser slash lemon, that's not called an esser. That's why nobody had to ever bother saying that it was possible. It's so mufan me'ela, that's why the Mishnah didn't talk about it even. The Gemara's don't talk about it, because you know, there's no Mishnah that says you can't take an orange. You don't need a Mishnah to tell you that. If the min is has to be an esser, something that's not a min esser is not considered to be possible. So if an esser gamurkos is not a earlier Acharonim had a lot of different ways to try to figure out whether something was an Esrog Gemurkav or not. It's hard to tell, but looking at the Esrog itself, it gave you all kind of different simanim where that could potentially indicate whether it's a Murkav or whether it's not a Murkav. At the end of the day, the both came right. We're not sure that these simanim are really 100% accurate. They're possible indications whether it is or is not. And therefore, the only way to really be sure that it's not an Esrog Gemurkav, it's not a grafted Esrog, is based on Erech and Embisu, and Erech told you that it's not. How did he know? Because somebody else told him. Somebody else told him. You just have to make sure that everybody along the chain of command is cautious to be giving Hades. You have to make sure that no one is fiddling around, no one's pulling any Gnevish shtick to grow us regularly in different ways. So therefore, we, this man Azeh, only rely on Mesorahs, we rely on traditions that we will only buy our Esrogim from certain trees. Those trees are already muksuf, that are not mukavim. They've been already looked at from generation to generation, that people have been watching to make sure that they're not Esrogim and mukavim. But most of the Esrogim that we have today on the market, the Esrogim should come with some kind of Ashkacha on them, and the Ashkacha usually will tell us that they're not Esrogim and mukavim. So we hope and pray that those Ashkachas are valid, that they're testifying appropriately that these are in fact not mukavim. What are some of the dinim that also govern an Esrog? Torah describes an Esrog as being a pre-Eitz Hadar. The Gemara tells us that pre-Eitz Hadar isn't just a description of the name of the fruit, but it's also the source for certain halachas that govern the kashrus of the fruit. Namely, that it has to be beautiful, it has to be a Hadar. There's a machlekes, the first and beginning of the third battle of Sukkah, about whether this din of Hadar applies to all Dal Minim or whether it's only true by an Esrog. Well, by an Esrog, presumably everybody agrees to, but it has to be, my questions even that. But in Esrog, it's more mistabbis, it has to be a Hadar, because that's exactly what the Torah describes it as being. It has to be a Hidr. What's considered, what kind of things could disqualify from being a Hadar? So here you have a very, very strange area of halacha, because the Torah doesn't tell us explicitly what's not considered to be a Hadar. Some of the folks can have a phrase, it's almost like in the Masorah Kosev El Chacham to be Keveya. There are different areas of being Keveya halacha. Some details in halacha that were the Rebbe Shalom was Moshe to Moshe Rabbeinu, all the details. Let's say, for example, the Lama Tachan Shabbos, That wasn't made up by the Rabbanim. That was Nimsa, Ish Rabisha, Moshe Rabbeinu, that the model of Hilchos Shabbos is patterned after the Mishkan. These were the 39 malachas that were done in the construction of the Mishkan. So this is the Tzur of Hilchos Shabbos that was Nimsa, the Moshe Rabbeinu. Then you have other dinim that are Lagamri the Rabbanim, that the details are covered in the Rabbanim. Then you have other dinim that the basic construct is their eyes, the basic mitzvah is a dinim in a Torah. But Lo Mesorah Kosov Al HaChachav, that the Rabbanim Shalom gave to the Chachmei HaDor to be Kedeya, how to fulfill this mitzvah deraisa. How is this mitzvah deraisa supposed to play out in terms of the details? Okay, for example, you have the Chol HaMoed. Many Rishonim say that Malachas Chol HaMoed falls into that category. Because Malachas Chol HaMoed is very, very strange. You find that some things you're allowed to do a Chol HaMoed, some things you can't do a Chol HaMoed. It doesn't seem to fit the regular patterns of the Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos is very straightforward. The third night of Malachas is finished. Yom Tov is also very straightforward. There are 39 malachas, but there's a hetzav echol nefesh, so a couple of malachas get chopped off. But Chol HaMoed, it's not a shek to have to go, for sure. Sometimes you're allowed to do it, sometimes now I'll do it. Might say, no, have to do it over the year, not do it, no, tzach ram, yeah, tzach ram. We know where these rules come and are going from. So Rabbi Natam threw his hands up and he says, these rules don't make any sense, son of love of their eyes. Can't think such a thing. How could it be that it's in their eyes, that such a minute difference between becoming also and mutter doesn't make any sense. The Rambam says it must be that all the issue of Malach and Chol HaMoed is all Medina Manim. It can't be the rice. We never have such a structure in the Torah. But the Rambam's older brother Rashbam in the Sefer Tzachim writes that Malach and Chol HaMoed is their Isa. So how do you explain it? It's some mud thing that sometimes mutter, sometimes also. But some of the Rishonim coined the phrase that Malach and Chol HaMoed is a Mesorah Chosn Chacham, namely, it's not that the Rosh Hashanah Meshi Rabbeinu, you can't do this malacha, that malacha, the other malacha, Chol HaMoed. The din is that Chol HaMoed is mikvah kodesh. That Chol HaMoed is also mikvah kodesh. Kol malachas aved l'sasu, the isur malacha only applied to the days of Yom Kippur, but the principle of mikvah kodesh, eila mo'adei Hashem mikroi kodesh, it's also mo'adam, and then the Torah says, observe 7 days of Sukkot. Eila mo'adei Hashem mikroi kodesh, observe 7 days of Pesach. So you see that the days of Chol HaMoed are called mikroi kodesh. So how is that Kriyas Kodesh supposed to reflect itself? So the Rebbe Shalom left it up to the Chachmei HaDor to determine what they thought was an appropriate demonstration of Mikra Kodesh. To have a day of Chol HaMoed Mamish business as usual, that would be inappropriate. To have Mamish Lamates Malachas, that wasn't given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Only the first day and the seventh day was given to Malachas. But the middle days have to be expected as a Mikra Kodesh, and you have to Chachmei HaDor have to determine what's called appropriate demonstration of Mikra Kodesh, what's not. That's what some Rishonim write the same, some Poskim write the same idea when it comes to Dalam Minim. The Torah says that an Esrog has to be Hadar. And the Dalam Minim, maybe the din of Hadar plus all the Dalam Minim. It's more close. And maybe Huk should call Dalam Minim Hadar. So there's a din of Hidar and all the Dalam Minim. So what's called Hadar? How do you know whether something's called Hadar or not? My definition of beauty is not necessarily your definition of beauty. So this is a Lamasar Kosm Chacham. So Chamas is Kedeya. What's considered to be beauty? What's not considered to be beauty? So you have an Esrog that's got this big giant blotch on it. So the Chacham will look at this and say, this looks terrible. This is not a Hadar. So at the end, you look at an Esrog and it doesn't look so bad. It's got a little tiny dot on the bottom. You can barely see it. So maybe better to be Hadar. That's the basis of what you have Mishnayis, Sugyas, in the third breath of Sukkah, which seem to give almost arbitrary discussions. The Gemara never says, how do you know that a blotch, two blotches is a problem, three blotches is a problem, one blotch on the bottom is not a problem, a blotch on top, where does all this come from? So it could be that this is like a together of the Torah, the Chacham, then Chacham have to be Kedeya, what's considered to be a Lashon Hadar. Once the Chacham make that definition, once they determine that this is called Hadar, this is not called Hadar, that's the Din Deraisa, then this is no longer a Hadar Min HaTorah. Once the Chacham are Kedeya, that you can't do the Malach HaKol HaMoed, the violation of this Malach becomes a Malach HaDeraisa. So the same thing here also when it comes to Talmidim, that we're dealing with Shadows on a level of Deraisa, even though the absolute nuance, intricate details aren't necessarily given to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what some places can explain. So what are some of the Dinim? What are some of the Halachas of Hadar? What is considered to be Hadar? Not considered to be Hadar? So the Gemara speaks about Chazazes, so that if you have certain, pimples or something, things are growing on top of the Yesrig, they're not supposed to be there, those things potentially disqualify the Yesrig. So the Gemara differentiates between which part of the Yesrig it's on. If it's on the top part of the Yesrig, the top third of the Yesrig, that's more of a problem. Even the smallest amount of a Chazazes can be a problem. If it's on the lowest part of the Yesrig, that's less of a problem. Why is that? People tend to look at the top of the Yesrig. That catches your attention closer. That's more of a concern of Hadar. The very bottom of the Yesrig, it's at the bottom of the Yesrig anyway. So if it's all over the place, it's about spreading, 2-3 places, it's picking up rove of the Esrog works in a couple of different spots in the Esrog, so it catches your attention here on the bottom of the Esrog, that would pose a problem. On the top of the Esrog, that's the biggest problem. Then the Gemara explained that you can have certain things that are certain colors of the Esrog, certain discolorations of the Esrog can also be a problem. And again, they follow those same rules. So on the top of the Esrog, that's a bigger problem. So the bottom of the Esrog, that's a little bit less of a problem. What are some of the maros that could potentially disqualify an Esrog? One of the colors that can disqualify an Esrog is black. If you'd have a black mark in an Esrog, that could potentially be a problem. That's what people start to go wild about an Esrog. You're looking at it, oh my goodness, there's a black. Of course there's a black dot in your Esrog. It's called dirt. What's regular dirty? Unless you have a mamish, that perfect crystal clean, Esrog. All this Esrog has little black dots on it. That's not what the Gemara was talking about. The Gemara was talking about discolorations of the Esrog proper. The Gemara was talking about rashes, we're talking about all kinds of different things that are growing on the Esrog, or changes of that. The Esrog is changing colors, it's rotting on you. That just detracts from the beauty of the Esrog. The fact that it has a little bit of a speck of dust on it, a little bit of dirt on it, that's garnish. You have to just know what dirt is not there. Most of the time you can look at it and you see there's nothing wrong with this Esrog. It's a little dirt headed into the cracks and crevices of the Esrog. That's because there's a lot of grooves in it, so the dirt tends to collect there. You see these little tiny black dots of the Esrog, so you get ask somebody and they'll tell you, man, that's not a problem, that's just dirt. Remember when we went to watch them grow the Esrog in the Shrove a couple of weeks ago. So the guy looked at us like we're crazy. Said, that's not a problem with the Esrog. That's actually all times it was dirt like that. As long as it's just dirt, then it's for sure not going to be a problem. There's a big machlekes in the Rishonim about another color in the Esrog that could potentially take away from the beauty of the Esrog. That's the color green. Whole discussion about what's the status exactly of a green Esrog. Is that considered to be a Mara that passes the Esrog or not? So we assume that green is a problem, but there's a machlokes in Rishonim why exactly is green a problem. And many Rishonim say that green is not really fundamentally a problem. That doesn't detract from the beauty of the Esrog. It's just the sign that the Esrog is not ripe yet. And the Torah says it has to be a free. So free, it's got to be edible. It's got to be something that's already ripe. But with green, it's not ripe yet. And that's what some folks can say, so many folks can say, that's what the most people in Christ will today rely on, that the medav amrum, that green is a problem, that's if it's mamish, not right yet. But if it's already in the process, it's already turning yellow, it's already up there already, so this tree, it's going to turn yellow in a day or two. So even though right now it's not fully yellow, as long as it's already starting to turn yellow, that's okay. That's what most people have, Esrog with a little bit of green on them, most people don't care about that. But they're assuming that's not what the Gemara meant when it disqualified green. But there's a Ritva that the Ritva says that green is a Mara Pashal. That having green in Esrog, that detracts from the beauty of the Esrog, and therefore it's subject to the regular rules of different chazalsis on the Esrog. So you have a little bit of a green on the top of the Esrog, and a lot of green on the bottom of the Esrog, so the whole Esrog is this Pashal. That was a famous quote of the Mishnah Yachon, that he followed that opinion. But then most people don't follow that. Some people say they were Machmir to that. Most people aren't so Machmir to that. They assume that green is, if it's mamish, absolute dark green, hasn't turned yellow at all, that's a problem. As long as it's in the process of turning yellow, so that's probably okay. That's what most people do. Right. So you have to be careful. So those who want to be kashish, not to buy green asrogim, you have to be careful that when you buy the yellow, they should be not overripe because of the super ripe, and by the yellow asrogim would be brown by the time it was over. It may not be the end of the world, but in close. The top third of the Esrog. From the head to the toe, I think. The top third. No, what did they say? The chotem. It starts to go up a little bit. Maybe not the top third, that's the mezuzah. I don't know. Maybe just where it starts to slam to the top. No, yeah. That's one of the signs that's a mortar. It looks like a ball that's falling out. Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure. Then the Shnayis Gemara thinks that other problems in Esrog, if the Esrog is chaser, if the Esrog is missing something, that's the problem. Even the smallest amount, that's going to pose a problem. So there's a big machlokes that approached him about a tool that appears in the Shnayis Gemara about Mipel HaPitim. If the Pitim falls off of the Esrog, so the Mishnah says that the Esrog is chaser. So it's machlokes, so we show him why is it chaser exactly. And some Rishonim say because it's not harder, that one looks so pretty, without a pitim doesn't look nice. And other Rishonim say, no, the reason why it's possible is it's chaser, because the pitim is considered to be part of the Esrog proper. Some say that the pitim is not part of the Esrog itself, so you can't disqualify that chaser, you have to disqualify that harder. Who cares? It's possible anyway, who cares? So there is a, according to many Rishonim, there's a difference after the first day. That's the first day of the book for it. According to many Rishonim, that during Chol HaMoed, so an Esrog HaChosr is kosher. The Gemara says that the Perish, an Esrog HaChosr is kosher after Chol HaMoed, whereas Tosfos holds in the Yerushalayim, that an Esrog Ha, which is not a Hadar, is still possible even on Chol HaMoed. Why that should be so, gotta wait till But Tosfos' famous sheet is that an Esrog HaChosr is kosher after the first day, and after the lacking hadar is not. That'll help enough to mean in terms of a pidum falling off. So if you hold that a pidum falling off is a chisaron of hadar, that's going to be a problem even after the first day. If you hold that it's only a chisaron of chasid, it'll be okay after the first day. That's what we're pretty makel on this, that when a pidum falls off, so after at least the first 2 days of chutzpah, we let people use it. Why is that? Because it's still fake, fake. Not all the Rishonim agree to Tosfos. The Rambam and the Ramban hold that even Esrog Neflach in Hidur is kosher after the first day. And even if this little bit is right, maybe in Esrog Neflach, when the pitman fell off, it's still called Adam. Maybe it's just called the Chasr. The Chasr for sure is kosher after the first day. That's what Mikra Din, the minute gets to be pretty makeable about that. The Rishonim go right to Chatchili. Try to get another Esrog. We'll be able to get another Esrog. But Mikra Din, we hold that if the pitman falls off after the first day, it's still called. Yeah, there are a few things to try to be careful about. When you're looking for a thriller, you want to make sure that it's not a motor, make sure it's really an Esrog. You want to make sure it doesn't have too any strange kinds of considerations for the Esrog. You want to make sure that it's not missing anything. You want to make sure that there's a hole in the Esrog. Make sure that the pitman's on. And try to have more rights that if an Esrog grows without a pitman, so that's okay. So the farmers have explained to us that doesn't mean what most people think when they read that Ramah. Oh, it means that this Esrog never had a pitman. Never have a pitman. Every Esrog has to have a pitman. A pitman is the part where it's fertilized. If it didn't have a pitman, it wouldn't become a fruit. It would never work. So it means that the pitman fell off in the very, very early stages of the development. So that's what the Ramah meant. It fell off very, very early, and now the Esrog just grows around it, so it doesn't look like it's missing anything. It doesn't look like it's lack of hard, it doesn't look like it's lack of cluster. So if you have an Esrog which grew in such a way that it hasn't had a pitman for a long time on the tree, so that would be okay. Everything started with a pitman one time. Without a pitman, it would never have existed in the first place. That was this chadish to me by the Esrog farmer.
People when they have these situations, they try to cut people, make a
rock
on someone else's
ruler. If they're concerned that the lulav is not kosher, then they should use somebody else's lulav. If they think the lulav is kosher, they should use their own lulav. I mean, you can't be asking the first day if it's not yours. It's like the yeshiva should think to go around, someone goes to a yeshiva to bother him, so he uses his lulav. Okay. So, any other questions about an Esrog? We're all ready to go. Okay, one of them minimum down. Okay, one down, three more to go. Okay, so we're going to move on to the lulav. Creates other kapos tamarim, so even though kapos tamarim is written in the Lashon Rabbim, so the Teshuvah explains to us, since it's written in the Chumash Kapas, it's written in Chaser, without a vav, so therefore the halacha, you only take one lulav, nothing too long, it can't be one lulav. What are some of the dinim that govern a lulav? So here also, it can't be a lulav, it doesn't look so nice, if it's lacking the hadar, that's going to be a problem. That's what many Rishonim learn, that's the problem of a lulav hayavish. Mishpah says, when you say about a sukkah, a lulav hayavish is possible. Possible in a Torah. Why is it possible? We stain the chumash instead of its dry, it's possible. And the answer is, that's not called hodah, it's called makaveh, and that's not considered to be a sufficient hidur. Rashi has a strange comment at the beginning of the Torah, but God writes, a lulav hayavish is possible because zek kelev yom dayu. Because it's not a hidden mitzvah. So Tosfos points out that hidden mitzvah usually is not a problem with the other. Hidden mitzvah is usually only with a chila. How can the Mishnah say it's possible? So Tosfos writes, this is not the regular din of hidden mitzvah, this is the din property of lulav, that lulav is hukashli yasrin, it's a special din of hadar. That's the reason why it's possible. But not how you slice it, but Rashi says, bottom line is lulav yavish is possible. There is a Yerushalmi that says that lulav yavish is possible because the possible kilim are amazing halukah. You can't use something dead to praise the Rebbeinu Shalom, so lulav hayavish is considered to be dead. Not enough kamina from the Risham. What do you do, Risham? The Pasuk already says it's not a hada. So the Ran quotes from the Ravid in the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah that Yisham is important in halacha. So exactly the kaveh for us, just how yavish is yavish. How do you know when something is dried up or not? So the first times in the beginning of the third parak quotes the Shaila, how dry is dry? What point do you say a lulav is considered to be a lulav hayavish? The Tosfos Topos and Tamar and the Chavis with Lumen and myself try to figure out how dry is dry. The Ravid writes that dry is at the point where you say that's no longer alive. You say that's dead. What do you mean? The Ravid writes Moshul Madav Adonim. When you see a body, so a dead body, it's more color. So we'll do in anyone in EMT to tell you, it comes to an emergency. That's what you see the colors. Yeah. He was dead. And how did you know he was dead right away? What was the color?
He wasn't breathing.
Wasn't breathing. That's also another way to know this. Okay, whatever. Okay, whatever. Anyway, but that would often be a way of determining, right? But looking at the color of somebody, you can get a pretty good sense whether he's with us or not. So since the Mokor Yerushalmi's source is Russia, Machmer, it's called the more mentioned in Halukah, it says once the lulav has lost its color to it, it's not green anymore. It looks white. So Kozman, you look at it, you see its green freshness is still alive. Once you see it's all white, you know, if you hold on to your lulav from Sukkot to Pesach, for the time you burn with the chametz, it's all white already, it's lost its color. That's the shear of Yavshus, once it's lost its color. So the Ramam, in the lulav, quotes other Rishonim, will say, no, that the shear is much way, way, way past that point. But as long as the lulav is not yet brittle to the point where if you touch it, it just falls apart in your hands, as long as even though it's polished white, so that's still okay. So did you ever that still consider to be a kosher lulav? And the Ramon writes that they used to rely on this because in Eastern Europe they couldn't often get lulav, and sometimes they would have to use last year's lulav. Last year's lulav was a disaster, they were totally white. But it doesn't matter because if they weren't so brittle, so the Yevon and Moses were through Machshav them. But in the post we don't rely on this anymore because it's not a Machshav, there are thousands and millions of lulav floating around, so we don't have to rely on this kula. So we assume you look at the lulav and the little screen is okay, it looks totally white, and it's, you know, that's not going to matter. What are some of the other halachas, important halachas that govern the lulav? So the first speaks about in the lulav, it's called Nechaz Latiyonis. So one of the leaves, some of the leaves, two of us split. The lulav is made up of different tiyamas, different twin leaves. So the leaves begin to split, that's considered to be a psul. That's some of the tracks from the lulav as well. That's a machlokes also. Is that a problem with hod? Is that a problem with chosim? Whatever it is, that's a problem. Nechlatiyamis. So there's a big machlokes in Rishonim. What does nechlatiyamis mean? So many Rishonim learned that nechlatiyamis means all the leaves are called the tiyamis, and if nechlatiyamis are rove with the leaves, so then the whole lulav is no good. And what if the leaves are split? Then the tiyamis are rove. All the leaves are intact, and then the lulav is okay. So other Rishonim say no, that there's one particular leaf that is the tiyamis. What leaf is that? That's the top leaf. The leaf that grows out of the shed, out of the spine of the lulav, if you just follow it up and look to the top, that's the tiyamis. That means that leaf is split, then the entire lulav is possible. It doesn't matter what the other leaf, that's the leaf that really matters. So I'm going to give you try to be machmir for that, and Shabbat the Reis, if we try to be machmir, that if the top leaf is split, so we wouldn't use it for lulav. How far is split mean? So the Pasha said, the Varmir, split means that at least rove has to split most of the way. If it's not, if it's rove sealed off, so they say we can do kula, so the whole leaf copy in, it's considered to be closed up. If it's just split a little bit at the top, Pasha says that's nothing. So some achmir ma'achmir v'ra na. Some achmir ma'achmir, no, but even if it's split even a little bit, that's considered to be a problem. Mr. Brook quotes some achmir v'ra'i, that if it's split more than a tefach, so then maybe you can argue it's going to keep on splitting, maybe that's a problem. But if it's such a minuscule, tiny, tiny split, that's a garnish, that's nothing. And that's okay. Therefore, we usually, we try the chedchilu to look for a leaf that's all the way to the top, intact. But if for whatever reason you can't find a lulav and it's down, it's splitting a little bit, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to be too concerned. Unless there's a tefach in the Mishnah Berurah, who's machmer and some of the shaylas, doesn't seem to be overly concerned. So, the chedchilu we try to look all the way, and it should be closed up as possible. That top leaf. There are some lulavim that shape in such a way that make it impossible for the split, because it's bent over. The very top of the leaf is bent over itself. Some people daftar prefer that type of lulav. The rush, we used to say that the rush used to daftar prefer that little kind of a lulav, because if it's bent over a little bit, it's going to make it much, much more difficult for it to actually physically split. So there was some Rishonim who didn't like that lulav at all. The Zvon took it, that Tafka did not like that lulav, because he thought that was a problem of lulav HaKofa. Mara says that if you have a lulav that's bent, that's a problem. So most of the Rishonim think it's mamish, the whole thing is bent, not that little tip of mashu on the top is bent. So some Rishonim Tafka thought those who love him were the greatest, and other Rishonim thought those who love him were not so good. But the Hasidim like those who love him, the Mistakim tend not to go off. I mean, if you're a Mistakim, you know you're looking for, the Mistakim tend not to go off to those who love him. But again, either one of them is kosher. Just try to make sure that it's not split. If it's split, it's not split all the way, you know, all the way down. The next of the minim is Hadassim, because it's Hadassim, it's Avos. So here, unlike the rule of Esra, here the Torah uses three words to describe Hadassim. We pass by the Tana, we try to follow the Tana, and it says that Hadassim, it's Avos means three. You have to have three Hadassim. You only have one lulav, one Esra, but Hadassim, you have to have three different Hadassim. How do you define what's called a hadas? So the Torah says lastly enough it's ovus. So ovus means like an interlocking, like a chain, that type of thing. That's what the Gemara says, that we have a tradition that the hadas has to be meshulash. It has to be three leaves growing together on the same level, overlapping one another. That's the bare bone minimum. That's the definition of what a hadas is. That's the fulfillment of the pasuk in the Chumash of an afetz ovus. The Gemara speaks about other kinds of related types of twigs, other kinds of related types of trees that look a little bit like the hadassim, but they're lacking that component of mishulosh. The Gemara speaks about hadash. And what does the word hadash mean? In Pashas it means a foolish hadass, it's a silly hadass, it's like an imposter hadass. Some say that hadash is a mistake, it's from the Lashon hadashita. Shita means it means a branch. It means a hadashita means it's just a branch beyond it. It's not a real hadas. It just looks, it's imitating just a regular branch of a tree. It's not a really hadas. But how you slice what the word comes from, the bottom lines are so good. Hadashita is not acceptable. It just has two leaves. That's not acceptable. So the Ramah writes that in Europe this was a big problem in Eastern Europe because they didn't have a hadas either. Dalam Minim was not a good mitzvah for Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe was just a miserable place. It was cold, nothing grew, and it's the last place you can find citrus fruits and palm trees and the whole thing. The only thing you had a lot of in Eastern Europe was a lot of aravos, but nothing else grew in Eastern Europe. Nothing in general grew in Eastern Europe. That's why they only had potatoes. That's why we have cholent. That's why we have potato crew, because our avosenu in Eastern Europe couldn't grow very much. They basically were able to grow potatoes and carrots. That was about it. So they weren't doing too well with the Esrogan, they weren't doing too well with the Lovim, and they weren't doing too well with the Hadassim either. So the Ramah writes that in Europe they used to sometimes use a type of a Hadass that only has two leaves on it instead of three leaves on it. And somehow he tries to explain why it's okay. Why is it okay? I think Gemara said the Farish is not okay. So the Ramah writes, if you look at the Gemara, it's Machlekes the Gemara. One day it says the Hadashait is kosher. The Ramah writes, so we passed him like that day, the Shastach HaGodol. Everyone asked again, who was passing that day? Nobody passed. None of them should have passed like that day. That was the Das Yochanan and the Gemara. The Gemara itself rejected that day. The Ramah seems to be saying that, well, the Gemara says that Shasachakit rely on the Das Yochanan. So we usually assume that Gemara beginning in Nida that says the Shasachakit rely on the Das Yochanan. That's only when the Das Yochanan wasn't rejected the Gamri. Let's say all of a sudden Shasachak, we're going to rely on the Shama. You can do that. You can only rely on a shasat chach, on a shita that wasn't really officially outvoted, wasn't officially nidcham in halacha. So the Ramah seems to assume that that day in the Gemara that said the hadashayit of kosher was never really rejected. It was just everybody else didn't think we should follow that. But the shasat chach, well, you can maybe follow that also. Then all these other reasons to try to defend the practice in Eastern Europe. At the end of the day, the post came right that we shouldn't follow this. The Ramah, Nebuch, no choice. So they had to dig it shita here, the lulav hayavish to rewind. That shita rewind, this shita here. But normative halacha is that hadashayit is a chal. So therefore, we should be very careful when we have our hadasim. They should have actually three leaves coming out together, not two leaves. A lot of hadasim that grow today have two leaves on one level, and then they have another leaf coming either above or below it. So we choshesh, that's a problem. That's not considered to be a kosher hadas. So the very often what you have is, on the same branch, you have some of the leaves are three coming out of the same level, and very often on the rest of the branch, it's at the bottom of the branch, it starts to branch out, no pun intended, and you have two on one level, one above and one below. So the post can write that whatever the shear of hadas is, that rove of the shear should be mishulosh. If rove of the shear of the hadas is mishulosh, so even though part of it here and there is not so mishulosh, so we just ignore that. What's the shear of hadas? So the shear of hadas is three tvachim. Something maybe a little less than three tvachim, depending on how to read the Gemara and Sukkah. But let's say we assume without three tvachim, so one should have at least rove of the shear of the three tvachim should be actually mishulosh. That's a further question. Let's say you have the three, you have rov or shia spread out over eight tefachim. So is that the star? I'm supposed to say. Even that's the star. But this is all b'diyah. The chachila, the whole hadas is supposed to be mishulash. Namely, all three tefachim are supposed to be mishulash. That's why when they sell in the stores today, they sell different standards of hadas and mishulash. So some they sell that are only rov mishulash. Those are the cheaper ones. And then the momahuna ones are the ones that are called the kula mishulash. And then there are different shiur, how much three tefachim is. So if you want the biggest shiur of three tefachim, the chazanishah shiur of tefachim, together with the lechatchila chum of having kum mishulas, thus you pay more money for hadash. So after you have aleph, and then there's aleph aleph, and there's aleph 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 aleph, and there's aleph aleph plus, and then nobody wants to be called Dave. Like in yeshivas, they don't want to call the boy shiur. They call aleph and aleph aleph plus. So we don't want to insult any hadassim, but between you and me, if you're buying the hadassim, so then they're usually just a robe, shiur, and mishulah. If you don't want to get that hadassim, then they should spend a little bit more. Just because you're paying more and it says on it that's still mishulah, it doesn't always mean that's what's happening, so it's probably not a bad idea to take a quick peek at the hadassim also before you stick them in the aluv, just make sure that what you actually got with your money, what you think you buy. He's supposed to spend, Lechatchila, he's supposed to spend a little bit more money, and he did mitzvah. He's able to afford it, he should spend a little bit more money. Take your shot. No, 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 that's down here. He can chop, you cut off also. Okay. The top of the hadas, the whole question is about when things are broken on top, the hadas is covering the leaving. That's the normal good hadas, intact and straight. Then there's the last of the minim is the aravas. So it would be really a shame to spend a lot of money on the minim and not plus the aravas. You want to make sure the aravas are kosher also. What didn't govern the aravas? Not so many. But they have to also, they have to be behudaran. They have to look nice. If you have aravas that's yivesha, so it's possible. If it's all dried out, it's possible. The aravas, when they dry out, don't turn white, they turn black. When you have an aravas that's already mamish, totally black, it's lost all its greenness to it, so that you shouldn't use that aravas. Either you figure out a good way to keep your rubbers in the fridge the whole week, or I should try to, or in addition to that, you should try to switch your rubbers. Usually most people get twist sometimes during Chol Hamoed. It's usually a good time to switch your rubbers. You live in any decent sized Jewish community, you can probably find a rubbers somewhere. If not, probably someone on your block has a rubber tree or something, or where you're on a rubber tree, you should try to make sure that your rubbers are up to par. If your rubbers start to lose a lot of their leaves, that could also be a problem. If most of the leaves are off, then the rubbers possible also. You want to make sure that their rubbers are still in a good shape. And they start to dry up and they fall off also. So you want to make sure that all of the above is okay. All right, so those are the basic dinim that govern each one of the dalamim. Now that we have our kosher dalamim in front of us, now we have to figure out what are we supposed to do with these dalamim. The answer is we're supposed to pick it up. We'll kach them. So we're supposed to do lakicha with the dalaminim. So what exactly does lakicha mean? So the Gemara says in a few places it's agve nafik beis. Once you pick the dalaminim up, that is there's nothing else that has to be done in the Torah. It's agve nafik, pick it up, you put it down again. It's because of this halacha with agve nafik. Not to say that Taisus raises a red flag about the bracha on the tefillah lulav. How in the world are you going to make a bracha on the tefillah lulav? Usually you have to make a bracha over l'siyachon, and you're not allowed to make a bracha too much before siyachon. Say, I'm about to put on tefillin, so I don't make the bracha when the tefillin is in the bag. I make the bracha when it's tefillin on my arm, about to tie the knot, right before. So I don't make a bracha on the matzah when I'm walking around. I make the bracha on the matzah, I'm sitting down at the table, I'm holding the matzah, make a bracha with matzah. You always make a bracha right before you do the mitzvah. So the problem is, in the lulav, right before you do the mitzvah, you did the mitzvah already. And once you pick it up to make the bracha, you're ready to get to the mitzvah. It's not over less yasin anymore. The place is working really, really hard how to solve that problem. The place comes up with some several creative suggestions how you could be holding the dalaminim, but not necessarily being yay to the mitzvah. So as long as you can figure out a kunst, an eitz, how to hold it without being yay to the mitzvah, then you can make a bracha that way. So what are some of the eitzes? One of the eitzes that says is you pick up the dalaminim without kavanah to be yay. Not to be yay until after the bracha. That'll be a good eitzah. So we don't like to tell people to do that because people get too confused. The kavanah, you tell people, if you have kavanah, no kavanah, that's confusing to most people. The Taz gives you another eitzah. If you hold the Levin Essig upside down, or not even hold one of them is held upside down, so then that's also okay because you're not yet to the mitzvah. Because when your mother learns after the false, you have to be there because they lost them. But it's interesting to me, when your mother learns after the mishkan, after she didn't earn them, that's a din for other mitzvahs, also has to, when you shake the Levin Essig, you have to be standing up straight. So if you're holding one of the minim upside down, you wouldn't be yaitzeh. So Taisa says that's a good solution because you're holding it, so it's called Ovelas Yosan. On the other hand, you're not yaitzeh yet. So that's the Gevaldi Yaitzeh. And then as soon as you make the bracha, then you can flip it around. So that's the source for most people do today. When they pick up the rule of the Nazareth, so we hold the yaitzeh upside down. And if Kol's not upside down, they're not yaitzeh. And then as soon as they finish the bracha, or whatever it is, then they flip the yaitzeh right side up. and then they're going to be, you have to remember to flip it. Some people forget to flip it. Some people get confused. They hold it to the bracha, right side up, and then after they finish the bracha, then they put it upside down. You have to be careful. You have to make sure it's upside down first, and right side up first. Put them up, that's the way you actually move. The Nitzion has a shaila about if you live in Australia, whether you should hold your Eshig upside down. And, because he says if you live on the other side of the world, then the Eshig will in Eretz Yisrael, so then it's definitely also the other way around. So we assume that that's not true. If he raises the shaila, then we assume that that's not true. Okay. Okay. Taisus writes, what if a person picked up the roof already, they're already yetzir mitzvah, and now they didn't make the bracha yet, so what can they do? That's the Shas and Chak, you can still make a bracha. Why? Because you didn't really want to finish the mitzvah yet. Why? Because you haven't done na'nuim. Because Mishnah says in Sukkah that you have to do na'nuim and shake a lulav, you have to shake, when you pick up a lulav, you have to shake a lulav at certain points of the davening, whatever it is. And Taisus writes that since you, even though Meikra didn't be ever, you were really yaitzeh the mitzvah ready just because the agri nothing right, but since you didn't complete the mitzvah yet, so you could still make the bracha smach the na'anuim. So Taisa seems to be learning that the na'anuim are part of the mitzvah, the tilas lulav. One could have argued that the na'anuim are part of the mitzvah of halal. Maybe they're not doing the tilas lulav. It's a different, maybe the na'anuim is supposed to have hands for halal, hands for lulav. So Taisa seems to learn, no, that the din of na'anuim is a din in the lulav as well. It seems to make sense that way, that the na'anuim are a part of the mitzvah of lulav. Because the Gemara says that one of the reason why the shear of a lulav is bigger than the shear of aravos and hadasim is kedil and anebo. The shear of hadas and aravos is 3 tefachim. The shear of a lulav is 4 tefachim. Why the extra tefach? The Gemara says you can get the extra shaking and waving out of the lulav above and beyond the top of the hadas and the aravos. That's a shear in lulav. It sounds like it's in that nuim and somehow a kiyam in lulav. So the Gemara says that at what age is the child old enough to buy the lulav and asterisk? So when he reaches the age of kedel and anebo. The Gemara doesn't say kedel ligbo sol hajiyo. Every little kid knows how to pick up the lulav and asterisk, but he doesn't know how to shake it. He thinks you pick it up and put your younger kid, younger sibling with it. And that's not called the gilav chinuch. You see that the shiur chinuch depends on the anebo, because the nianua is somehow kiyam in the lulav. It's not akabi diyeved, but it still pretends to be a kiyam in the lulav. That's the reason why that we do nianuim even before halal. The Gemara doesn't describe the Nanuim before Halal. The Gemara just says, the Mishnah says, Hechem Nanea, so the Hodu, Anna, whatever, different place to Halal, but even Nanea. So we have a practice that as soon as we finish picking up the Lulav in the morning, so we immediately do Nanuim. What do we do Nanuim for? Because that Nanuim is not a Halal picking Nanuim. That's the Shiur Lulav picking Nanuim. So whatever the case is, that we do a Lakichas, a Lulav Asterix, so we pick it up, the Dabu Nafimbeg, then we do a Nanuim during the course of the before, during Halal, etc. And that's the mitzvah of the Shlemut, the Reis and the Rabbana, that's the entire mitzvah of Lachachem, Lachem. The Torah says, Lachachem, Lachem, it has to be Lachem, so when the Mishnah learns out, what Lachem means comes to exclude the Lulav HaShaol, if that person borrows a Lulav from somebody, that would not be acceptable. Somebody gives it to me as a Matana, that's okay. If he gives it to me as a Matana, not a Hachzir, that's also okay. Hopefully we'll learn a lot about that in Kiddush and Bavav. One of the examples of Matana Hachzir called a Matana is the Din of Lulav. It's called Lachem in the Torah, even though I have to give it back to you, but right now it's still considered to be Lachem. The big machlekes that we've shown him is Matan of the Hachzir, a kin in the Olam, when it's Nai, is it a kin in Muzman, it's a Rosh, and then a Vigna. I don't want to take away too much excitement from the condition of above, but when all the dust settles at once, Matan of the Hachzir, you must initially distinguish that works for Luz and Esther. In addition to the din of Lachem coming to exclude the Luz of Hashol, it also excludes the Luz of Hazazel. There are two reasons why Lulav HaGazel was called. One is because it's not called Lachem, and one is because of the Talmud Mitzvah Babi Aveira. My Nafmina, I already know it's no good for Lachem, my Nafmina Mitzvah Babi Aveira. My Nafmina after the first day, after the first 2 days of Chutzal. On the third day of Chol HaMoed, there's no din of Lachem anymore. So I could borrow Lulav on Chol HaMoed Lechad Chila. But can I steal Lulav? I mean, obviously I can't steal Lulav Lechad Chila. So what if I stole a Lulav? Bidiyev, and I want to use the stolen Lulav. One day the Gemara says, you can use it, because there's no din of Lachem. So Bidiyev, I said. The other day I said, oh, even though there's no din of Lachem, there's still a problem with Mitzvah Rabbi Aveira. Mitzvah Rabbi Aveira is equally true after the first day as well. That's the big machlokes of the month, because Rishon has the whole tumul in the beginning of the third parashat of Sukkah. But the basic din of Lachem disqualifies any Lulav and Esrog that's not yours. There is a question in the Poskim, we talked about this a little bit, about whether Kidin Derabbanan, Mahalalel Deraisa, whenever we have a mitzvah deraisa that requires that the object belongs to me, let's say a ring for marriage or with an eserig, or maybe with some masa, whatever different things, with a chetash or mitzvah that have to belong to the person, what if it doesn't belong to me in HaTorah, it only belongs to me in the Rabbanon? We only made a kidin that's bani mid the Rabbanon. Would that qualify as owning it or not? So that's a big machlokes Rishon. We spoke about this with Avram. We spoke a little bit about this. So according to those who say that a kidin de Rabbanon wouldn't work for their rights, so this would potentially be a problem. When you buy a Levinas, you have to make sure they really own it in HaTorah. So how do you make sure you own it in HaTorah? So if you're doing a shicha on it, it's not going to do the trick. You have to make most kindness to Paskin, both Shon Paskin and the Yechidin. We spoke about this a lot, right? So who was open this year? No. Torah Mos Konos. So there are some more matzvahs that when they pay for Luv Nesu, they want to make sure that the coin is not going to be in Kesef. How do they make it in Kesef? So if you just pay a credit card, so that may or may not be a Kinyan Kesef, because the Moicha may not get reimbursed the Kesef after Sukkot. So depending, the Moicha gets the money way before you pay your credit card bill. You don't pay a credit card bill for another month. But the Moicha gets the money from the credit card company who's paying on your behalf. So your credit card company is basically lending you the money. Let's say if I buy a lulav 2 weeks before Sukkot and I put it on my credit card, so the odds are the next 2 weeks he's going to go. The merchant's going to go after Visa. The Visa is going to give him the money. The Visa laid out the cash on my behalf, and now Visa's going to come after me in a couple of weeks from now. So that would be okay. So then the money was paid for, so the object already belongs to me. But let's say you pay for the lulav nesek in erev Sukkot. And then it's probably by the time the first day of Sukkot rolls around, it takes a couple of days usually for the merchants to go after the credit card company. So they're not going to get reimbursed yet. So it turns out that there was no Nesinus Kesef that was given yet. So there was no Nesinus Kesef that was given yet, so what makes that Luv Nesu yours? Well, the answer is, well, the Kiddush Mashiach makes it yours, the Kiddush Hagbah makes it yours. But according to the Yechelin, that doesn't make it yours in that time, it makes it yours in the Rabbanah. So unless you want to say, well, there are other Kiddush that I make. Maybe I made a Kinyan Chatzah and brought the Luv Nesu into my house. The Luv Nesu now belongs to me because it's Kinyan Chatzah. Let's say I brought it into my car. So it's in my car. So my car is my kli. So Kelev Shalom Kainalai. So maybe that's considered to be a Kinyan. Those things would work. The only problem is that sometimes a person doesn't own a car, sometimes a person doesn't own a house, sometimes he's only renting. So the only renting, that's a big machlokes to be shown him. Who has a Kinyan Chatzah on a rented item? Let's say I rent an apartment from Ruvain, and now I want to be kind of the Dovish will have to fall into the apartment. I'm the Seich who needs the masker, so there's a big machlokes to be shown him. Who gets the Kinyan Chatzah? Does the Kinyan Chatzah follow the masker? Does it follow the Seich? Or let's say Kinyan Caleb, if I'm renting a Kli from somebody, so who has the Kinyan Chatzah? Is the masker or the Seich? So Kinyan Caleb, Shidim Kubetz's rights in the beginning in Bav Metzia, Dafyami, these days, Dafyami a couple of days ago, that Caleb Shaladam is an extension of a Kinyan Chatzah. Just as the Kinyan Chatzah is a machlokes to be shown him, who gets the Kinyan Chatzah? The Kinyan Caleb Shaladam is probably also the same machlokes. A lot of people don't own houses. He's a rented apartment. He's not the bottom of the apartment. So according to some, he wouldn't have a Kinyan Chatzah yet. Let's say he leasing a car. He doesn't own a car. Registration doesn't say civil up. Registration says you're a bank owner. Owns a leasing company. So one could argue that you can end up, you thought you spent $500 on a living asterisk, it doesn't belong to you yet. Because you didn't make a real bone question. Most people aren't so worried about this. Most people couldn't care less about this. Because they assume that somewhere along the way they were kind of. Either they were kind of with, even if they paid with a credit card, they were kind of, or sometimes, or they were kind of with the Caleb, or maybe King and Caleb works even if it's a Sochor. Maybe they're kind of with King and Yad, perhaps. It's a Subas, among Subas, and you hold the bombs in your hand, maybe it's better than a ball. Yeah, there are different possibilities to explain how the King and Yad works, but most people aren't so worried about it. Some people are very mocked on this, so they don't want to get involved in the Shabbos, so they pay for cash. They use cash. Not because they want to avoid taxes, because they want to pay cash, because they want to make sure that the Luv Nesek belongs to them. Belishum, something like that. I mean, that's a better kid in Situmta. The only problem is that Situmta is also not so partial that it's a real kid in the right. Not wrong for the ones, but not everyone's so sure that Situmta works to the I don't different. Again, these are chumis. Most all people just go and they buy a Luv Nesek and they assume that it belongs to them in some shape or form.
The check,
you have to wait till Kedushin of Hay to find about checks. Because when you check, is I'm writing, I'm obligating myself to give you money. So that may be a Kinyan Kesef, according to some, maybe not. That's a big question. There's also a big question how checks work legally. There's a big tumult. Anyone here knows anything about checks? Whether a check is, when you write a check and you sign a check and give it over to somebody, is that really mamash a transferring of the kesef? Yes, indeed, in the machusa. Or is that, what? Right, right. So it happens to be, I forgot about the economic part. Anyone here knows anything about this? So it's machlekes is England and America. The different banking laws in England and America that apparently, I forgot already which way it is. Remember how it goes? In one place, I think in America it's not mamish or kinyan. I think it's not, it's almost like a zchus gvia. He has a zchus to collect the money, but the money is not really his yet, and he mamish has it in his hands. And I think according to English, maybe British banking laws, once you have the check, that money is mamish yours. I don't know, I forgot already what it is. But for me, this is canceling. So it's a little bit, it ties out a little bit of Milchus Ribbis and a little bit of a quirk that Eretz Yisrael happens to follow the British system. Because when they, after 1948, when they started to follow their own laws in Israel, so they discontinued most of the British. If you have some old Turkish and old British laws that are still known in Eretz Yisrael today, Eretz Yisrael happens to be close to the British system of checks. I forgot already how it plays out. Okay, anyway, get back to this story. What? Okay, anyway, get back to this place. So, I want to make sure that little Benesser belongs to you without any shayla. Kachel Mechem, so the rest of the pasuk is Vayom HaRishon. So, Vayom HaRishon means that the mitzvah min HaTorah is only the first day. After the first day, there's no mitzvah min HaTorah, unless you're in the Beit HaMikdash. If you're in the Mikdash, then the Mikdash is a milkman called Shiva, because the Smachtam of Benesher Mekech, Shiva's Yomim, that goes on the Benesher Mekech, and that mitzvah of Smachtam is referring of anything, but it's also referring to Ruv and Asrug. The mitzvah of the Rai says we not Ruv and Asrug each day of Sukkot in the Mikdash. There is a Machlekes Rashi in the Rambam, how do you define Mikdash for these purposes? Rashi defines Mikdash as being mamish to basic Mikdash proper, and the Rambam seems to say that all of Yerushalayim is Mikdash for this. We find, like let's say, we've got the Chilas Ketchup Kalam, we find that Yerushalayim is an extension of the Mikdash. The Rambam seems to learn that all of Yerushalayim takes on the status of Mikdash for these halachas. So the Binyan Sion has a tshuva, what would the din be this man hazeh? No one's going into the base of Mikdash. There's no Mikdash today. And according to the Rambam, who says that all of, let's say, all Halach and all city of Yerushalayim is considered to be Mikdash, and then maybe one could argue that even if there's no base of Mikdash proper, but Kedusha, Rishon, Kitchen, Shadi, Kishlos, and Lavo, so if you're in the old city, so then you have a mitzvah in a Torah of Matilas Lulav the entire week. That's what the Binyan Tzion suggests. And therefore, he thinks that, let's say, if a person, say, for argument's sake, he's Davin Shacharis and then he goes to the coast over a minute time at Kolomoid, we should shake the lulav again in Suffolk, to take his lulav along with him. Because according to the Rambam, he wasn't yotzei the mitzvah d'oraisa in the morning, he was only yotzei mitzvah d'rabban. After the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the Yechman Zachi instituted the d'rabban to take a lulav the whole week, zechel mikdash. And then at Torah, he wasn't yotzei anything. Now he becomes mechubed of the d'oraisa to shake take a lulav with him. Or let's say a person wants to daven by the coast over Kolomoid Sukkot. So you should make sure that as Ruv and Esrog are kashim in the Torah, because kulas that we have, those are all kulas because Ruv and Esrog after the first day is only mitzvah rabbanan. But if it would really be a din deraisa, then all bets are off. It would have to be kashim all of the deraisa. That's what there are many people in Moscow today. They go to the old city and join the Kolomoid, so they make sure to take the lulav with them, and they make sure that the lulav is up to par on a real level of their rights. Some of the kulas we would otherwise rely upon wouldn't apply. But for the rest of us, there's a mitzvah mit derabbanan, where the Yechman Zach was massacred after the mitzvah was destroyed. There's a mitzvah mit derabbanan, Zechla Mikdash, lulav is mitzvah called Shiv, the Torah speaks about Yom HaRishon, as Min HaTorah, mit derabbanan, the rest of us. In Yantav Sheini and Chutzaret, and the Zana is a suffix, but in the Sheikh Lulav and the Shani and Chutzbarat, so what mitzvah exactly are you performing? Are you performing just the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan and Zachai of Lulav Kol Shiva, or you're performing a suffix derais of the first day? Enough to me, what standards of Lulav and Esther you need? If it's just Rabbi Yochanan and Zachai, then you can take the weaker, the lower standards. If it's a suffix derais of the first day, like any other Shani, then you have to go with the derais standards. That's how we assume the halacha, that in Yantav Shani and Chutzbarat, you have to make sure that you have all the standards of the rights. Therefore, the lulav has to belong to you. After the first day, it doesn't have to belong to you. And the chutzpah, after the first 2 days, it has to belong to you. And so you have to be careful. We will talk about this a little bit later on when we get to the Kodos Lahachsia. The Gemara Sutta says that you have to make sure not to give your lulav to your own child before you shake it yourself. Because once you give it to a child, then the child is kind of, can be knocked back to you. That becomes a whole tumult. So most people think, okay, great, I'll shake first, I'll give it to my child afterwards. That works in Eretz Yisrael. the chutzpah doesn't work, because the chutzpah still has to belong to you on the second day. So you wouldn't want to do that in chutzpah, even the first day. If the second day, if you shut on the second day, then you give it to the child. So what do you do? How does the child yotzei? Either the child yotzei with a borrowed lulav, you have to buy not to be machzik him, because some Hashem say borrowed is good enough for chinuch, or you have to buy a kid's own lulav. Make sure the chinuch is kosher. Yeah, it's only a suffix, because maybe Rash is right. Maybe the whole thing is doesn't exist. So we wouldn't make a bracha. What are you doing? No one's ever done this. No. Kami Nishiva should think to do. Go on the Chalamah, take a look at you. Okay. Good. All right. Any last questions just about moving answering? No, we're good? Okay. All right. So we'll stop for now. We'll hope tomorrow, Mr. Shem, until tomorrow, Shia, what time? 9:15? Right? Okay, so assuming that there's no terrible traffic, we're going to try to find out the students, I'll do a little overview of Sukkah, and then I'll have a little bit of a chizik and service between.